You're listening to Pull the Line, a tattooer-created podcast about respect and tradition.
Welcome back to another episode of Pull the Line. Today, we have a very, very special guest, Mr. Dan Hazelton. Dan, how are you doing today?
I am good. How are you guys?
I'm doing great.
Acceptable.
Acceptable. I'm here.
Acceptable is acceptable.
Thank you for taking the time to come hang out. Appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely. So the first question I like to throw at people, how old are you? How long have you been tattooing, and how did you discover tattooing?
I am 49. I have been tattooing, the older I get, I keep forgetting the exact year. I think it was 96 I started. I was saying 98 for a while, and then someone corrected me that I worked with. He's like, I started in 98, and you were already there. So I think it was 96. And how I got into it, I guess I was just the metalhead kid in high school. And I was always drawing, so I would draw like metalhead stuff, like skulls and demons and stuff like that, and flames on everything. And it was just kind of a natural progression to get into tattooing, because I would eventually want them on myself, and friends did, and some turned 18 before me. So they would have me draw their tattoo, and they would take my drawing to whatever shop they would go to. And the artists that would do their tattoo would start asking who did the drawing. And then my name started ringing a bell because I was doing a bunch of them. And eventually down the line, one of those shops needed a new artist, and they looked my name up and got a hold of me that way.
Was Absolute your first shop?
It's the one I technically say is. I did work at another one for I think like 2 months. I did one tattoo there, and it was so dead, and I was so broke that I literally didn't even have gas money. It was in Waterford, Wisconsin at the time. So I didn't even have gas money to get out to work the next day. So I just packed up my stuff and quit. So there's no money here.
So did you?
Yeah, Absolute technically was the first one.
So it sounds like you just kind of jumped into like doing tattoos. Did you have an apprenticeship?
Nope. I did it the hard way. My apprenticeship was tattooing and experimenting on my buddies that were more than willing, and they were even like arguing with each other on whose turn it was to get another one.
Trial.
That's cool. I've never met someone that said that they didn't have an apprenticeship, but they just started tattooing. That's different. It's cool.
Really?
Yeah. It's different.
I guess these days.
I didn't have an apprenticeship, Lisa.
What?
I never had an apprenticeship.
Oh yeah.
I did the same thing Dan did.
Oh yeah. We did talk about that during the first episode too. So
yeah.
Drawn flaming skulls, and it was just a natural progression.
That's right.
Yeah, it might be our age group, Rich, that it might be a thing of the past. Yeah. Nobody, well, at least maybe they just don't get good enough if they practice themselves or teach themselves. That nobody wants to hire them, but apprenticeship is always best.
Yeah, I agree. I always wonder. I did it. Like an apprenticeship is the way to go. But yeah, things have changed.
Yeah, even if you do like make something out of yourself, the amount of years you could have saved if you just done it properly, that you would. Could only imagine where you would have made it to if you did have one. So it's always recommended.
Yeah.
Trial and error is not usually a good thing when it comes to tattooing.
Nope.
For any skill trade, I feel like for that.
Right.
Direction's always better if it's available, I guess.
I was like 18 or 19 when I did my first one. They're not thinking so properly. And then my more than willing friends, I didn't have too much of a conscience about it. It was pretty easy.
Honestly, same. I mean, I had an apprenticeship, but I practiced on all my friends and they were super cool with it. They didn't give me fucking money. So
yep.
I don't feel bad. I guess that kind of leads into the next question I had of what kind of obstacles do you think, if there were any, were presented from being brought in that way?
Well, my personal experience, my biggest obstacle from that was the fellow neighborhood guy that was also learning how to tattoo in his kitchen, and he wasn't doing so good, and he got a little, I don't know, competition thing didn't sit too well with him, and he ended up robbing my house and stealing all my equipment.
Jesus. Holy shit. He was on some New York shit.
Yeah, or, you know, crackhead shit, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. Well, I guess I my mind immediately goes to, like, you know, some of the older dudes from like New York in the 70s talking about how everybody in the boroughs, there was always the one person in the neighborhood that did the tattoos. And when somebody else stepped onto their turf, there was a problem immediately.
Yeah, that old school, there's levels to everything. It even goes down to the scratchers.
Yeah.
It's funny.
Did you build your first machine then? Or did you buy it? Or
my first machine?
Yeah.
My first machine was the Spalding and Rogers right out of the back of the magazine. So I didn't build it. I wasn't that savvy.
Was that ever anything that you learned? Was that like a skill that came along later on, or?
I was never the best at tuning, and I'd never built a machine. So, yeah, I was never the best at tuning them. There was always someone else at the shop I was at that their machines always ran so great. And I would just hand them mine. I'm like, make mine run like yours. I could maintain them myself, but whenever they were really giving me an issue, I would just hand them over to someone else that knew better.
I got to ask.
I studied my ass off, but my machines all ran on hope.
Was it John that you gave your machines to? John?
Not. If I'm right, I think John handed his over just like I did.
Really?
I believe I handed them to Julio and Jesse Santoro, I believe. Yeah, those are probably the two dudes that I handed them over to. Theirs were always running awesome.
I forgot Julio worked at Absolute.
Yeah.
I'm talking about Julio Avila, right?
Yep, that's where I met him.
That's awesome.
So to clarify, this is in Milwaukee, the Milwaukee area?
What, Absolute?
Well, where you started, where you're from, I guess. I should have started with that question, maybe.
Well, I'm in the West Allis area now. It's right outside of Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. And that's where I'm at now. But Absolute, where I first started, that was in Menominee Falls, Wisconsin.
Okay. How long were you there for?
I was at Absolute for 9 years, I believe.
I got tattooed by you in West Allis as well at Sacred Heart.
That was Sacred Skin. Yeah, I left Absolute for Sacred Skin. I was there for a couple of years too.
What kind of influence on your lifestyle did tattooing have, if it had any? I mean, it sounds like you got into it pretty young, I would assume.
Yeah, well, I don't know. That kind of unfolded on its own. Other than the going to the metal concerts, stuff like that, and everybody else there is tattooed, and then became of a drinking age and going to a lot of local band shows, and just a lot of those guys are all tattooed. It just became normal. It's just life.
Yeah.
So it influenced it somehow, but just unfolded on its own. Next thing you know, here we are.
Wait, I've mentioned this before in previous episodes, especially the one that we had with Jason. It's so funny how many parallels there are in tattooing to music, and how many people in tattooing were kind of how they found tattooing through the influence of like music and the subculture from it.
Yeah. Well, music is it can be a powerful thing. It grabs you. there's the people that music doesn't grab. Those are the people I'm more surprised about. I'm like, yeah. You don't tap your feet? what else? Do you not smile?
I always get weirded out when I talk to people. Like one of the main questions, just small talk, is when you're tattooing, we all have our scripts that we use. You know, like what do you do for a living? What kind of music you listen to? And it always kind of weirds me out when people are like, yeah, I don't listen to music.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah, those people scare the fuck out of me.
It just those must be bored.
Sociopath.
I agree.
Or future ones, who knows?
So you were Absolute for 9 years. For anybody who doesn't know, Dan is a very, very talented biomech artist. When you were at Absolute, how were you able to start getting into that style of tattooing while you were there, or did it come after that?
Well, when I was there, I was more of a new school artist when I first started, but my own personal style, at least. But it would still have like the skulls and faces in it, so it'd be still slightly on the creepier side, but a little more cartoonish. And but biomech was always the style that impressed me the most. And I saw it first before I was a tattooist, and that kind of is what made me want to become a tattooist. And so I mess around on paper drawing it, and it just wasn't like what I was seeing, and there was no way I was gonna put it on people yet. So I was still doing my more new school style, and that was the majority of the Absolute days. So the last couple of years I was getting more comfortable with the biomech and was starting to put it on people.
I wish biomech was something that my mentor had exposed me to more, because the dudes that I came up with in Skin Candy and Racine here were kind of like traddy dudes. And it took a while for me to realize how fucking sick biomech tattoos are. Like, I look at that shit these days and I'm like, I can't even imagine having a brain that can comprehend tattooing something like that. Nonetheless,
I feel creating. The same way. It's so involved. There's so much going on in all the levels, and there's just the light sources coming through, and it's just, it's so impressive. I've never been able to even just halfway pull it off. It's lost on me. All I can be is a viewer and enjoy it.
Yeah. Keep messing around on paper. It'll eventually happen, but to pull it off and to pull it off successfully are two completely different stories.
Yeah. I think it's wonderful that you included how you, you know, tinkering with it and seeing it on paper and not wanting to put that on people's skin. Cause I know a lot of people who would just start the initiation of trying something new just directly on people's skin. Fuck it. Yeah. Let's try it out. Slap it on there. If it doesn't go well, then not my skin.
And biomech almost has to be on a larger scale to look proper. So if you're going to experiment and you're not quite ready yet, or you feel you're not quite ready yet, that's still a big, expensive, painful tattoo you're putting on someone. So you should probably be a little more confident in it before you start it.
I guess it's like not one of those things that you're just like, oh, I'm going to start tattooing and I'm going to be a biomech artist right away. You'd have to like already kind of be like good at tattooing when you start that style, I suppose.
Yeah, there's rules or unwritten rules, whatever you want to call it, in every style. But out of all the styles I've messed with through my years, the amount of rules and unwritten rules biomech has is pretty infinite. You come up with your own after a while, and they start becoming like opinions. Like, I use this rule because of my opinion. I don't like how this happens when I do biomech this way. So
yeah,
this is my rule, my opinion. Those people are on forever.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, especially when you put that in contrast to something that also similarly has a ton of rules, like Japanese, where it's these rules stem from, you know, anatomy, mythology, composition, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, and some of those aren't unwritten. Those are written.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that comes from a more cultural background too. So yeah, those are written rules, whereas I think biomech is, can be a little bit, I mean, I guess you can kind of take your own spin on Japanese as well to an extent, but yeah.
You don't want to do it on Ink Master, that's for sure. You don't want to change it.
I actually never really watched that show, but.
Yeah, they don't like it if you mess with it at all.
Which is crazy, because there are some people who have very niche takes on Japanese style tattooing that I think are so fucking beautiful. Like, actually, surprisingly, there was, I can't remember the artist's name. Our new roommate is a tattooer, and he was showing me a book that he had purchased recently. And it was from a Japanese artist who likes to do a lot of collaborations with big brands like Louis Vuitton, G-Force, Nike. And it's pretty cool having seen the art that that person's created that is still pretty well based in tradition, but has all of this really cool modern shit put into it. And it kind of reminds me of the same, I guess, kind of sass or attitude that I see in a lot of newer modern American traditional takes, you know, where people are just, I don't know, taking classic images and throwing, like I said, I don't know, a very sassy spin on it. And I don't know, I don't know the rules of Japanese tattooing or how the shit works. If I did, I'd probably be a better artist for it. But I was very surprised to see that in this book that he showed me.
Yeah, I was just thinking, like, getting a call from a big company like Nike or something as an artist asking, it would be a great like payday or contract to have with them, but it just sounds like a nightmare to me, dealing with some guy in a suit telling me what he wants in his biomech for Nike.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And I draw something up and he just wants some lame cheese ball thing thrown in there to take out this cool thing I put in there and throw in some swoosh or something.
Yeah. Biomech, yeah, but everything's biomech.
But can you make it like a soccer ball on one layer, and then the layer behind it is like a basketball, golf ball, like spikes? You know,
just ruining the biomech, but they pay a good money to ruin that biomech. So
yeah,
be tough to do.
A Nike paycheck for a biomech half sleeve or something?
Yeah.
Just include it a bunch of skateboards and DC symbols.
Better be on Bob Nike or whatever dude's name would be.
Nike. That's funny. Nike. So on the note of us talking about biomech and sort of the approach of doing it in the form of other tactile art before, you know, a tattoo, what other kinds of art forms do you pursue outside of tattooing that probably, I assume, blend into your getting into biomech?
Before doing biomech, are you asking what I got into before doing biomech? What other art forms, or what I'm into now?
Both, I guess.
Back then, I wasn't really doing any other mediums. I might have just started airbrushing. You know, it might have been around the same time doing biomech, or actually progressing with biomech and starting airbrushing, but airbrushing took a bit too, so I was a novice at both of them for a bit. But these days I'm doing a lot of oil painting, little acrylic painting, mostly oil, and I'll even do some sculpting, minor sculpting, and a lot of digital work.
Really? Sculpting? I don't know if I've met another tattooer that sculpts. I don't sculpt, I should say, but a tattooer that sculpts it.
It's nothing I do too often. I have done a few. It can be fun to do and keep me occupied for a while. It's a little messy, but good change of pace.
Yeah.
By the way, I want to say thanks for that night of the first time I ever did anything digital was at your house. It was me, you, and Jason Vogt. It's the first time I ever did anything digital.
How long ago was this?
You don't remember it? It was a long time ago. It was at least 10, 12, 13 years ago.
Okay, so it was the old tablet where you didn't draw right on the screen then.
You're drawing like this.
Yeah.
No, I didn't like it.
I've sat a few people down in front of them for the first time, and yeah, it takes a bit. It's that, especially when you couldn't draw on the screen back then.
Right.
Took a little bit to get that eye-hand coordination down, and then when someone else is over your shoulder that's been doing it for a while, it can get a little frustrating.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, I've seen a few people.
You made a little frustrating. Shit.
But you work that bug out, and it gets second nature pretty quick.
I've never understood how people do that without seeing what's going on.
I was just gonna say I thought it would be pretty weird too, but that, yeah, I'd say it 10-15 minutes you got that eye hand coordination down, and you can just fix up the wobbly things you did before you had it down, and then it's becomes fun. I always said it was like a painting video game.
That's a great way to look at it.
Yeah.
With no mess.
So you don't have an iPad? Is that what you were saying earlier?
Nope. Never had an iPad. I've been using the Wacom Cintiq for my digital stuff for years now. And that's still going, so no need for an iPad. Never even needed one.
That's the one that's like has the screen right on it, right?
Yeah.
Is that how you draft up a lot of your like tattoo work is on that, or is that, or do you still stick to it? Okay.
Yeah, pretty much everything is done on there. I draw it on a photo of the person, so it fits specifically for them.
Yeah.
Comes in real handy for that.
That's what I use my my iPad for, to Procreate. Same basic thing, but I would take a photo of someone's arm and I just draw on it on the screen. It transfers really well into the stencils. I like it.
And it just fits better.
And I always have one of these on me. I just pull this out of my pocket, so that when the person comes in, I can just, okay, from here to here is 11 inches. Pop it into Photoshop from my tablet and then size it up exactly and make a stencil.
Yeah.
Nice technology.
Come give the dog attention quick. He's starting to get ornery.
Is that Magnus? Barking.
This is Magnus.
Well, hello, Magnus. Welcome to Pull the Line podcast.
Yeah, actually, going back to that night, Brutter was still around. I met Brutter.
Bruder?
Bruder, yeah. I always called him.
Yeah.
He's a good dog.
That's Meknes is, well, it's actually Vermeknes. That's German for legacy, but his full name is Bruder Vermeknes. So it's Bruder's legacy.
There you go.
Cool.
Wonderful. So who do you think is like your artist heroes, tattoo artist heroes, regular artists? Like, who do you look for when I can't imagine you run into many, like lack of inspiration moments, because you're always producing really kick-ass stuff. You know, do you have any heroes, any artists that you really dig?
Well, Guy Atchison was the one that I saw that's where I heard of Biomech. Well, other than H.R. Giger,
right,
in the Alien movie. But I saw one books before I even tattooed, and I couldn't even believe these were tattoos on people. And that's what I saw and made me want to do that. And I tried it on paper and I just wasn't doing anything like what I saw in that book. So I'm like, yeah, this is not ready to be put on people yet. But even to this day, just seeing what Guy does is his artwork is one thing, but the tattoo quality and the speed and the healing, and if you've been tattooed by him, Rich, I know you have, is surprisingly painless. Well, it's not painless, but for like 3-4 day tattoo sessions in a row, 10 hours at a time, it's surprisingly not as bad as you would think.
Right.
It's not fun at all, but I didn't think I would make it, and I made it, so that it's got to say something there. And then now the cover-ups that he's doing is
right.
Just everything. And then you even watch him tattoo, and his posture is perfect. When you're having a conversation, or he's having a conversation with someone else while he's tattooing, it's like he's not even concentrating on the tattoo, but he's doing some of the highest level stuff today.
Yeah.
And it's just like no effort for him, just spitting it out like nothing. So those are admirable things to notice.
Absolutely.
Yeah, what a flow state to be able to find. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
fun. Yeah, so yeah, he's one to look up to and try to reach those levels. I would like to be so effortless like that. That would be nice.
I'm glad you touched on that, because I was curious if you remembered and who it was that introduced you to biomech that really
oh yeah. Yeah, this is back in late 90s when I saw that book.
Was that the one that was in like the high school folder, the Reinventing the Tattoo, before it became a hardcover?
No, I forget which one it was, but it was the hardcover book with all paintings in it and tattoos in it. It wasn't a tutorial book. It was Organica, I think it was called.
Oh yeah.
Right.
I studied one of his books during my apprenticeship too. I still think about it all the time. I may have not become a biomech artist, but he was also really influential in understanding fit and flow, just understanding like the S curves kind of like on an arm, you know, where you can get your shape for a tattoo that moves.
Yeah. So, and then those are like the basics of like the unwritten rules. The S curve is a classic example. It's once you figure out the purpose of the S curve and why it's in the shape of an S to some degree, you can start changing it. You can change or not make it an S curve. So when you see a biomech sleeve that doesn't have an S curve in it, but it works still, that artist should get some props.
Yeah.
You found a new letter, if it's even in the shape of a letter.
That's funny. That in a similar but different note of the unwritten rules, Rich and I were just talking before this about how so much of tattooing's history, even though there's tons that's documented through books and you know, videos and stuff like that, so much of it is still oral, including, you know, a lot of those unwritten rules that are passed down through just practice.
Yeah, and there's awesome artists that are coming up with new ones all the time. So it's a never-ending thing. Unwritten rules are infinite.
And
the more the better.
On a similar but different note to that, something that we've kind of started talking about more and more in these episodes are parts of tattooing culture that should be maintained and parts that should be left in the past. Do you think that there are any that should be left behind that have kind of gotten to this point after years and years and years of, you know, tattooing culture?
I don't think I really care so much. Let people do what they want to do. If people like them and want to get tattooed by them and they stay successful and stay in business, great. Maybe there's a market for that old school aspect or something that some people might hate. Well, there's some people that might love that. And they'll go to that shop or that guy. So I don't know. Maybe it's because I left the shops for so long that I don't really have an opinion so much. Yeah, they could do what they want to do. If I don't care for it, I just won't go there.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's so, yeah, fair. Whatever. To each his own. Apparently. As long as it's ethical, I should say.
Yeah. I've had that conversation with a lot of people. They're like, what about this? What about this? I'm like, look, you know what? I just kind of focus on what I do. Like what you said, I kind of just don't care. Like I want to see people that are inspiring, that if they're pushing the envelope and like, holy shit, that's cool. But if someone's doing stuff that I don't like, I don't even really give it any energy. Cause you're right. It's pointless. You know, I'm not going to get mad about something I can't affect in any way.
Somebody's going to like it.
Right. Right.
Yeah, totally. I mean, another side of kind of that same coin that I've seen a lot is I've seen a lot of people complain about, like, for lack of a better term, art school kids getting into tattooing and stuff, and you know how they don't have this kind of apprenticeship or that kind of apprenticeship anymore going through it. But a lot of those people that you see are the people that are bringing new shit to the table.
Yep.
You know, yep. those new unwritten rules, or the new kinds of styles, or, you know, just in general, I feel like almost everybody I've ever encountered online that has, you know, a formal education in art, they're doing such good fucking work. They're pushing the envelope so hard.
That's almost two apprenticeships. They were apprenticed for art and then apprenticed for tattooing. So they got a double head start as opposed to someone like me that didn't have either one.
I think my only concern with a lot of the stuff that I see that's being done is, like, I wonder about the longevity of it, because there's certain things that are being done that just from my limited knowledge probably won't hold up over time.
Yeah.
But, yeah. You know,
I guess that's something that will, I don't know, that would be tough to see that ever change. Like when someone is starting their career, that's the tough part, is how you see your work, your personal work, how it holds up through the years. Like, you have to be a tattooist for 10, 15 years to be that.
Right.
So that's 10, 15 years of doing it your old original way. And what if that way just isn't very durable?
Right.
It's going to take 10, 15 years to realize that.
Yeah.
So that's always going to be tough, especially when trying to be innovative, like starting something new. Like, yeah, it's a new style, but it might be a little fragile. It might not hold up so well, but that might be an opinion too for the customer, like, depending on how it doesn't hold up. Like, if it just fades out and lightens up in general, that's easier to be reworked, right, as opposed to something that's overly lined and the lines start spreading and touching. It might have to get some laser or completely covered with something else, as opposed to that lighter, fragile thing. Just could have been refreshed and look brand new again. You just have to have it done more than once in your life.
Right.
If you ask the customer, you just power line it with some white ink and then.
Yeah. But the customer might be cool with that, as long as you tell them, like, I really like this soft, fragile look, but yeah, I'll probably have to get this done a couple times through my life. But they might be fine with that. They might like that look enough to deal with it.
Yeah. Which, honestly, that's something I've surprisingly, the last, like, year or two, I've heard a lot of people say in regards to something like fine line tattoos. They're like, well, I'll just get it touched up as often as it needs it. That's fine with me.
Yeah.
And I personally, I hate getting tattooed. So I'm like, I never want to get anything touched up ever.
I don't care for it myself either.
Amen. The older I get, the harder. Like, I'm supposed to get my nose pierced tomorrow. I think I'm going to cancel. Like, I have pain in the facing of it. It's like, I don't want to get it tattooed or pierced, but I want to have them. It's just every year harder and harder.
Yeah. The older I get, the, you know, the lower the drive to get tattooed is there. I want them. I just wish it was there. just to go through it.
When was the last time you got tattooed, Dan?
Oh, well, the older I get, my concept of time just gets worse. It's got to be like, it's got to be over 10 years ago when I got my arms done.
Oh, wow.
But that was a doozy of a session, though.
Yeah.
Two sessions, I should say. Two sessions was really like 6-7 days, though.
Wow. Yeah.
So that was a doozy.
Yeah. I'm going on about 9 years since I've been tattooed.
Yeah.
It's just like, I've got
feels good to do that.
I'm actually going down to Guy at the end of this month to get my neck kind of gone over again.
Oh, yeah.
I'm fucking dreading it. I'm looking forward to seeing him and hanging out with him, but I am not looking forward to the pain.
Well, now, since it's been so long since you had it done the first time, and now that I said that, like his posture and all that, and the painlessness, focus on that. I bet you'd be surprised. Not going to be that bad.
I mean, the thing is, getting tattooed by one of your heroes, like, I don't care how much it's going to hurt. I'm going to sit there and I'm just going to shut my mouth and take it. Because it's fucking Guy, you know. The last tattoo I got was on my shin by Gil Monty, and he earned his nickname Gil the Drill for a reason, for a fucking reason.
So think of that when Guy's on your neck and compare the two. Like, Guy will seem like a feather compared to that.
Probably. I literally have divots in my shin.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's next time I see you, I'll show it to you, and you'll be like, holy fuck. And it's so hard because I was watching him tattoo and I'm just like, don't go over that spot again. I'm like, fuck, you're going over that spot again. I'm like, that's going to heal terrible. Yeah, sure enough, it healed terrible. But again, he's been tattooing for 50 fucking years.
No. Nope.
I'm not telling him anything. I want to shut my mouth and just let him do his thing. You know. But it wasn't fun, man. It was cool to get tattooed by a legend. Same thing, you know, but still. It makes for a good story, if anything. You know?
Yep, it's there. It's for sure in there.
It's probably deeper than just my skin, too.
It's tattooed on your skeleton.
Yeah.
So to kind of peel things back a little bit, since we had discussed when you started getting into biomech, I'm curious, how long did it take before that kind of work became a majority of what you were doing, aside from just like transitioning into it?
That's a tough one to pinpoint, because that the new school stuff was still going. I was known for that, and people were coming to me for that, and I was trying to introduce this new biomech style, so it kind of slowly morphed together. And then it has to be well after I left Absolute. And probably around the time when Lisa came in to Sacred Skin, biomech was probably just starting to maybe take the lead on it there. But by the time I was at my private studio, it was pretty much full force there. If I do something other than biomech, it's on my choice.
Yeah.
But biomech is always the top choice.
Yeah. At that time, biomech, I think you had more of it in your portfolio for paintings and airbrushing, I think, less of it for tattoos. You're doing a lot of vehicles, I think, if I recall.
Yeah, I did a few of those.
Like cars?
Your car was pretty cool. I remember seeing that. You had painted it look like a monster.
Yeah.
Yep. I remember that.
Yeah, I did a few cars and a bunch of bikes and a bunch of helmets back then. Haven't done anything like that in quite a while. Now I'm probably more interested in a vehicle wrap, a vinyl wrap, where I could do it on my tablet in my underwear.
Right. Yeah, I remember we had the conversations years ago about, you know, the stuff that you put out, and you'd like give people options of stuff that you've drawn. Like I've been trying to adopt that, because I think that's pretty smart. You want to, you know, give people options of what you want to do. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Because you're going to shine at what you want to do. You're going to, you know, you're going to, one, you care about it more and you're going to kick ass at it because it's your thing. You know, I got some changes coming up that I'm going to really kind of throw myself at that kind of attitude because I think it's a good way to go.
I've actually seen artists calling that posting wannadoos, like actually taking what you want to do and calling it wannadoos, like just drawing them up. It's hard to find time.
The only issue with that is if it's your drawing and you put it up before you tattoo it on somebody, it's just so easy to be stolen by someone else and they can tattoo it before you do.
Right.
And get that money that should have been in your pocket, you know? So, and it is what it is, but I guess that's just the give and take. If you want to promote that style, like you were saying,
right,
you got to get it out there. The only other thing that can keep that to a minimum I've noticed is more larger scale designs. Like if you're posting a picture of a full sleeve or a back piece, those are a little less likely to be stolen and copied because it's just so much more work involved and more money involved and
right.
A better artist involved that would probably know the design. If you have a watermark on it or something, he'll be like, no, I'm not tattooing this dude's stuff. Why don't you go have dude do it?
Yeah. So, I think that really talented artists are becoming more and more apprehensive to even allow heavy influence of somebody else's design into a piece. Like if they're able to reproduce something well enough that they could steal it, they'll just draw their own thing, you know.
Yeah.
Especially with like what?
Hopefully.
Yeah. Hopefully. I think that's what's happening. I mean, that's what I see in my friends and in my shop. Anyway, nobody's just stealing stuff. And, you know, on the occurrences that people have stolen stuff, like it gets called out online so hard. There's just such a fear of that. So, I mean,
that's been happening to Rocket a lot lately.
The stuff that was stolen?
Yeah. Rocket. And like, it's not even that they're taking his designs that he posts. People are straight up ripping tattoos that he does. Actually, somebody ripped one of his recently and did it and won an award for it. A show that got posted online by said show.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well,
there's all the credibility of what I just said.
Yeah, but when people do that, whoever might be listening as a customer, they always overlook the fact that if they bring in a photo of a person's body that has a tattoo on it to a tattooist and they say, I want this tattoo on me, and the tattooist traces that tattoo off of that photo. Well, that picture is on a rounded body part, say it's an arm or something. It's rounded. So now they're tracing it as if it's flat and they're putting it on another rounded area. So now it's doubly warped. And it never looks right. So the customer needs to know that too before they even bring those in.
Oh, and I should clarify, Lisa, I should just clarify the person who recreated his that won an award for it looked like dog shit. It did not look good.
Oh wow.
He very, very much so won an award on no basis in any way. So sorry, just to clarify.
A good design.
Yeah, you'll have that too.
Yeah,
I can't imagine just tracing a tattoo, even if it's a four-leaf clover. It's a quarter size. I'm gonna draw my own. Like,
How difficult is it? If that's too difficult, maybe this shouldn't be the line of work for you.
Yeah,
I mean, there's a situation where that's appropriate. If someone's like their father is dead, and they have a photo of their tattoo and they want that exact tattoo, I have no problem. You still have to like make sure you unwarp it, but you can utilize that. I think that's the only legit reason to copy anyone's their tattoo.
Yeah, even in that situation, the original artist would be understandable of that too. But if he was the original artist that tattooed the dad, and the son or daughter wants it, it would probably be cool to have that tattooist do that one too. You know,
right.
He can draw up one just like it.
Yeah. There is also a whole nother, there's like this sector of tattooing too, though, that is like based on, like, I mean, I'm a traditional artist. So like, there are so many sheets of flash hanging on the wall at the shop that people can come in and they're like, oh, I want that, or I want that. And even then, it's still getting redrawn and being done differently in the skin, a different color palette, a different approach with where black is implemented, or, you know, whatever, this or this or that. But
flash is different. Flash is, it's implied it's going to be tattooed over and over. There's consent implied. Right. When you pick something off the wall, you're saying, I know that this is for me. You don't think that you're just getting the only person, whoever gets that design. Like,
right.
I hope people don't think that, because that's ridiculous.
I've had people get mad. I drew something. It was a mandala, something like that. And this woman loved it. I'm like, hey, just so you know, I drew this as flash. I plan on tattooing it multiple times. It's going to be in my book to be done. And I did it like 3 or 4 times. And she like messaged me angry. She's like, how many times are you going to do this tattoo? I'm like, well, I told you it's flash. Like, if someone wants it, I'm going to do it again. Well, if I would have known that, I'm like, why don't you tell me you wanted a custom one? I would have happily drawn something for you that's just for you.
Perfect. That reminds me. That reminds
it's
me
pronounced
of this.
Mandler. Mandler. Mandler.
It reminds me of a story at Absolute. I was doing walk-ins and someone wanted a little off the flash, off the wall, a little heart with a rose going through it. And it was pretty cheesy drawn. And I said I could spice that up and put some light sources on it and make it look cooler. And they were asking, like, well, what's that gonna look like? And I'm trying to explain it, and they were being very skeptical, and I'm saying it's gonna look a lot better than this, and pointing to the wall. And one of the other guys I was working with saw me having the, I don't know, the discussion with the person, and the person was hesitant, and the guy I was working with got frustrated with hearing it, put his machine down and said, Dan, will you just color it as shitty as it is on the sheet? And I said, all right. Yeah, you're right. I will. And then the person goes, whoa, wait. No. You can do your thing. You can do your thing. And I did it and they loved it. But it took the dude to tell them that it was shitty, basically. They would have got it just as shitty as it was on the sheet.
I do think as artists we have to, because I guarantee all four of us can visualize stuff in our mind's eye, how something's going to look. And I've had people, like, I've drawn a rose for someone and I colored it red, and they're like, well, what would that look like blue? And in my head I'm like, well, just
blue,
imagine it blue.
But blue.
But here's the thing, there's a good amount of people that can't see that, they can't visualize that. So like what you're trying to explain to her, he or she, I don't know, whatever, had no idea. So like, I just think we have to remember that shit, because not everyone can see in their mind's eye like we can. It was like, I can see a design that's done before it's even on paper.
And well, I'm back sure you can too. Back in those days from that story, that was before Photoshop, where you can just slide a lever and change red to blue real easy and show them. So if back then, if they were that type of person that just cannot picture something simple like that, they should probably just have a little more trust when getting tattooed. They're just going to frustrate everybody involved, like themselves and the tattooist, and probably still not get what they had in mind in the first place.
Yeah, this rose story was before digital anything, so like I had to redraw it and, you know, color it in pencil, and I'm like, it would have taken another half hour, and I'm like,
for a $80 rose,
right? I love
when people come in, and a lot of my business are repeat clients that come in and they get traditional whatever every time they come in, and I'll have a line drawing of something, and maybe I don't have the Procreate file anymore or whatever. And they'll be like, you know, what are the colors going to look like? And every single tattoo that I do, that is a traditional style tattoo, for the most part, I use the same exact colors every single time, and be like, oh, well, you know how I've done 5 other tattoos on you that are just black, brown, red, green, yellow. It's going to look like that. They're like, can I see it? I'm like, I've tattooed you five other times with these same colors. It's going to look just like those, just a different design. And more often than not, people that I've tattooed before come around and they're cool. And they're like, okay, all right, I trust you. But sometimes it cracks me up. I'm like, it's going to look the same.
Especially if they've been tattooed by you before, you can kind of give them some shit saying, come on, man.
Yeah.
You'll be fine. You'll
I feel be comfortable fine. with my repeat clients being like, you got eyes, don't you?
Yeah. Or you can fuck with them and say, oh, I'm going to do it polka dots.
Yeah.
I've told people I'll do colored versions, but they're going to pay, you know, depending on the size of the design. I'm like, well, this is going to take me like an hour to color. So like, give me an extra $60 and I'll color it and show you. It's going to be rough, but
I'll do a color study for someone if that's for sure what they're getting for their appointment. Like if it's a line drawing that I just don't have, like, oh yeah, okay. If you're for sure, like you want to do that, I'll absolutely put together a color study for you. But if I'm going to fucking hard line this and then do a color study for you, and then you're like, I don't want that anymore. Like, okay. All right.
For sure. Are you for sure? Yeah. I've found out that people just aren't for sure, even when they are.
Yeah. I'll do a color study for $100.
Yeah.
For a $100 deposit.
Yeah.
But.
If people were really for sure, there would be no such thing as divorce.
Yeah. Right. I got to give some people some credit, though. A lot of people are pretty sure, but yeah, still the ones that I run into. They're not so sure.
I gotta say, I love the people that are like, look, I like your art and I trust you. Those are the best. Yeah. But then again, we've got art to show people, like, this is what I've done, this is what I can do, you know.
Yeah. But then some direction is good. You don't want to do what I did to Dan and just show up and be like, just do something. I just put you in such an awkward spot. I'm so sorry about that. I was like,
oh, I don't even remember how that went. I didn't have it, I drew it up right there.
Yeah. We didn't discuss what we were gonna do, and I got there and you're like, what do you want to do? And I was like, whatever you want. And you were like, and I was like,
That's a great thing, to the point of like, but I always ask, like, give me some direction.
Like, some direction.
Do whatever you want. Like, okay, but do you want flowers? Do you want, you know, a skull? Do you want a dragon? Like, just give me some direction. Because a lot of the people, unless you know them well enough, you have no idea what they're going to get, what they're into. Yeah. Like, I've got some friends that let me do whatever I want, but I know that they like skulls. I know that they like, you know, tigers and shit like that. But someone off the street, no idea.
But you also never know what you could make them into.
Right.
Like, what if you put something on them that they've never even been introduced to before, and that's their new love, you know, like they get that all over them now.
Right. One of my favorite sayings is, people don't really know what they want until you show them. That's one of my favorite sayings. And then there's a lot of truth to that.
I've gotten pretty lucky in some of the clients that I've gotten that are real good about that. I had a guy that came in a couple of weeks ago. I think he actually listens to this. He might hear this, John. He came in for a full day sit, and he was like, yeah, I like flowers and I'm a teacher, so it has to be school friendly. And we did a full day sit of school friendly designs, and flowers were incorporated. There's one guy, I did a whole sleeve on him, and we did a consultation, and I was just asking him questions about himself and his interest. And he was like, I fucking love eating mushrooms. And I was like, sick. I'm going to draw as many drug related trippy fucking things as I can. And he's like, yeah, I love that. And we did a whole fucking sleeve
around it. Well, and Vince's got a sleeve of it. He should love them.
Yeah. But I clients like that are the best. Just enough direction to know that, like, all right, this is what I have to do to fucking knock this out of the park for you.
Yeah, in the biomech world, the direction can be tough because it's pretty advanced and it's abstract. So there's a vocabulary for it, but again, that goes back to Guy Atchison pretty much started that vocabulary. I believe the S curve is his term. And I forgot where I was going with that. What was I saying?
That just direction. Clients can't really give direction on biomech because they don't know the vocabulary. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, because it's abstract and they'll be like, I want this to really look swoopy and to make it look like it goes when they're using things like that. And I'm like, yeah, okay. I guess that's biomech description, but
I want it pointy.
The drawing I draw, is it gonna be to you or not? You know? So it can be tough getting direction in the biomech world. So you're best off finding the person, like, overall paging through their galleries. If you like the majority of it, if not all of it, just let them do their thing. You'll love it. It might not be the exact thing you were hoping for or had in mind, but you're going to love it equally, if not more.
Yeah, I tell people all the time that, like, the next tattoo is like, I want Jason to tattoo my left chest plate, and I'm just going to let him do whatever he wants. Just because I want a Jason tattoo. I want to get tattooed by you these days too, Dan. But I'm just let you, like, do your thing. Like, you, I think you know me well enough to know what I like. And this is biomech. I want it to go shoo shoo twice.
Yeah. Make it fit the spot and look right with what it's around. If you have other tattoos around it, that's all part of it. We take all that into consideration, and if there's existing tattoos that take away some of the, you don't get some then. it's what we have to work with. There's all kinds of unwritten rules that we got to keep in mind, and that's what makes it look as cool as it does. Is we apply to all the things in it, and all those nuances show in the finished product.
Right.
Yeah.
I also think that people that, like, go to you or Jason or even Guy, who to me, excuse me, all are fucking brilliant in their own ways. People go to you to get a Dan Hazelton tattoo. Like, I want a Dan Hazelton tattoo. It's not what I want. It's just like, I just want some of his art. I think there's a difference between that and, like, what street shops do, which is kick ass to me, you know.
Yeah. The more serious collector.
Right. Like, I'm at almost a point like
name brands.
Right.
Like, I got to have some Nikes.
Right.
I got to have some Nikes. I got to have some Adidas. You know, you got to have, you're a fan of it all and you want a little bit of everything. So, those are the collectors.
Can I get some of that Bob Nike?
Bob Nike, the Robert Nike.
Or his son, Bob Jr.
Bobby Boy Nike.
One of the last questions I have for you, and this is a very generalized question, so interpret it in whatever way you see fit. What is the hardest part of tattooing, in your opinion?
Hardest part. I think that might be the more, for me, my personal experience, the more beginning of the paying your dues, the walk-ins, the being scolded by your boss, that kind of stuff. I don't know, you find your own little rut, and you figure out what to eliminate. Like, I don't like this part of my job. I don't like this part. How can I keep that to a minimum or take it out completely? And then by the time you're 20 some years in, you should be pretty content where you're at, because you built it. You know, it's your custom build. So it should be designed for you, unless you're being an idiot and you're not designing it for you. Or you have the boss that refuses you to design it. He's like, you're going to do it my way. I designed it. Yeah. So then you might want to go out on it. Did I lose you?
I'm still here. My phone just died. It's my webcam.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. If you're one of those people, you're probably better off just going out on your own.
Yeah, that's a good answer though. I mean, and I think, and this is kind of what's cool about the dynamic that we've tried to create with this podcast is I'm only 5 years in, so I'm still very much so in that era of yeah, give me the infinity symbols, give me the Roman numerals. You know, I mean, I like what I like, and I've gotten very lucky in that I've tons of people that love to get traditional American traditional style tattoos, and I'm very lucky that I've been able to concentrate a lot on that. But I've also put in a lot of time working outside of a Navy base and, you know, taking those things that you got to kind of cut your teeth on. And I still find those things exciting for now, but I also get made fun of for that all the time. People that are 20 years in, they're like, oh yeah, we can tell that you're fresh.
Well, either way, doing the stuff you don't want to do is still putting in the reps. So it's not wasted energy. Your bills are getting paid and you're putting in those reps, the 100,000 hours, you're doing it. Yeah. So it needs to be done. It's a good thing, but looking back, yeah, to do that again would not be fun at all.
I still enjoy a good feather turning into birds here and there.
Yeah.
Easy money, mindless. It's over and it's done. It's out the door. Like, yeah, line them up. If I'm in the right headspace, line them up around the block. I'll make that much money in a day, no problem.
Yeah.
There you go. You put it out there. Now they're coming.
To play devil's advocate on that too, though, if you did have to go back and go through that phase of tattooing, but these days, do you think that would be a little easier of a process with where things are at in tattooing now, with, you know, iPads and having the internet and so on?
I don't know. I think it might even be worse. I think younger people are worse today, but it's easy for me to say because back then I was younger, and I'm not going to say I was bad, even though I probably was, but I don't know. Maybe I'm too old and old school. I don't know. I think it might be worse.
You know, what's really funny is, like, you know, I've been doing it for a long ass time too. And man, there's nothing I would like more than just a walk-in Saturday.
Yeah.
I miss that shit, man. The just going, like, doing what you do, do a good, clean, quick tattoo, get done, get paid next.
I will keep that in mind.
What about people
takes a vacation? Sorry, go on.
What about people passing out and price hunters and stuff like that? Those were great for walk-in days. First timers, overly scared.
All the people that have passed out in my life, it's all make great fucking stories. It's fun to think about because it's ridiculous, you know.
It's never first timers.
After the fact, like, I tell those stories, they're great. I used to put notch marks in my cabinet at Absolute. I'd do four notches, and on the fifth one, I'd cross it out and start a new set of four. And I had a good amount going, but dealing with it, I don't know. I've never felt that feeling that they feel, but I've seen it enough that I can kind of imagine. They look so gray and pale and sweaty that it just looks like it feels so disgusting inside.
Yeah.
That I don't even want to look at it anymore. It's part of the job, but I try to tell people to catch that early. You feel that coming on, you let me know.
Yeah.
We'll take a break. It's pretty rare, but
I've done a few guest spots where, like, the Saturdays are walk-in days. And there's six artists, and we each did like 25 tattoos. And God, I fucking love those days. And you know what? Everyone else has people passing out. I never did. Yeah. I think it has something to do with one, experience. I know how to tattoo, and I also know how to talk to the client and to get their mind off what's going on. You know, and I think I don't know.
I don't want to jinx it, but we do walk in Friday, Saturday, and Sunday here, and we haven't had somebody pass out in. God, it's bad. It's got to be getting close to a year, and there's seven artists here, and no fainters.
What, did COVID take away the passer outers?
Oh, yeah, they're all dead.
Not a guy anymore.
Dude, I had a guy. I had a guy in Cleveland once. He passed out on me at a convention, and he actually had what I think was a seizure. And there was a nurse.
That's part of it.
There was a nurse.
That's part of passing out, though, Michael. They seize. That's normal.
Yeah, well, there was a nurse right in front of my booth who helped me out, and I was and he came back around relatively quickly, and she was like, "Oh yeah, just do this, get some protein in him, like get him some food, get him water, and get him a drink, whatever." We finished it, and he was fine. He was like, "Ah, I don't know what the fuck was up with that." I was like, "Yeah, I don't know, man, but you almost made me pass out and have a seizure watching you flipping."
The convulsions are probably like. I would say like about 40% of people who pass out have that. I don't think it's necessarily a seizure, because like I don't think what's happening in your brain when that happens is the same as epilepsy.
Yeah,
but it's your body just reacting.
They're more locking up. Like you see it in MMA a lot. Like when someone gets knocked out,
they
kind of lock up. It's more freezing up and as opposed to a seizure flopping. You know,
that makes sense.
Yeah,
maybe I've been telling that story wrong.
But
it can look very similar sometimes.
Yeah.
But
it's
going back
to a pleasurable site.
But going back to what we were talking about, like, you know, I wouldn't mind spending the rest of my days just doing little walk-ins, as weird as that sounds.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, just I think a lot of it is that I want all my creativity to be for myself, for my art.
Well, I think every shop needs that, at least one of those guys that enjoys doing that. Yeah. There's usually it's the opposite. Like the walk-in artist doesn't want to do them. He wants to get to a point where he doesn't have to do those anymore. So if you find someone that's content for the rest of their career doing that, that's a good employee to have at a street shop. You could have your custom guys, but you got that one dude that loves that. If anybody asks you for one of these, send them my way.
It's funny. The shop that I started at, I kind of hated the whole walk-in thing, but I think it's just because of the setting that I was in. I was in a setting where I was definitely getting exploited, like pretty hard. And I left and I went somewhere that was more private and, you know, was able to kind of develop more of a clientele that was, you know, geared more towards coming in and getting American traditional style stuff. And then I went and worked outside of a Navy base for a while. And I don't know, there's so much now that I've gone through it, there's so much value for me personally in that whole experience and having been put through the ringer again of like having to do the infinity symbols and the Roman numerals and the feathers exploding into birds. And I think I developed so much from that experience and now I love it. Like I went back to that place that's more private here in Racine. And as soon as I came back, I was like, I will take everything. I will take everything that you guys don't want to take. Please give me trickle down economics works here. Give me everything you don't want.
I love it now. Whenever I hear that, I'm like, good. You guys can have
it. all you. All you, big chief.
Well, it goes back to what you said about, like, you know, you have to steer your career where you want to go.
Yeah.
You
know,
yep.
It's up to you. And, you know, I wouldn't mind being a walk-in guy at a street shop.
Yeah. You definitely meet more, a bigger variety of people that way. It's
lots of shit birds. First
timers. Maybe they only will get one, you know, as opposed to the people that get hooked on it from that first one.
Different
conversations.
Right. You do a small tattoo on someone and they usually come back and they want bigger stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. Maybe doing the bigger stuff on everybody is just inevitable, at least if you're good at it anyway.
Yeah.
I find a little stuff harder.
If you're that walk-in guy and you only want to do little walk-ins and someone that you've done or tattooed before says, I want this 5-6 hour piece. Like, I got like a 2 hour minimum. You'll have to go to one of the other guys. And you can keep doing your smaller ones and knocking them out and doing 12, 15 a day.
Right. What's the longest session you've ever worked on someone?
I'd say more years ago, I was more enthused to work that long, but now my back gets sore and I need to be done. So I do a full day session, like 6-7 hours is a usual. So by that time I'm good. But back in the day, yeah, I would tattoo till 4 or 5 in the morning easy if they were up for it.
Right.
I can't really do that anymore.
Man, yeah. There's a guy who works at the Tiger where I used to work at, who does that. He'll come in at like noon and he'll do walk-ins until like 4 o'clock, and then he'll have a 5 o'clock appointment and he'll work on them until 3, 4, 5 in the morning, and then go home and then come back in at 11 a.m. to do it all over again. I'm like, Jesus fucking Christ.
Yeah, is that like, does he have a lot of kids or is he on drugs?
he has 3 kids and he also takes care of his mom.
Okay, so it's, yeah, that's real natural, like fire, like love motivated shit.
Yeah.
The hustle. Yep.
Some people cannot have downtime. I schedule in downtime. I need it.
Same. I definitely get what you mean by wanting to save your creativity though, Rich. I feel that. I mean, I've talked about it a few times on episodes here and there of like having to find the balance for myself personally between work and music and other things that I have that involve squeezing my brain of the creative juices, and you know, sometimes having to split those things up is really hard.
Bringing out the old sponge. Yeah.
I guess when I was saying I schedule in my downtime, that still doesn't mean I'm not working. Like, I'm still doing something art related. It's just I'm not obligated to it.
Yeah.
Or like I said, I could do it in my underwear.
Right. No, ever since COVID hit, I've done that. I literally take, like, in my poem book, I mark off a day like art day, you know, drawing for this. And I just give myself the entire day.
Selective expression.
Well, just, you know,
obligated.
But like what Dan said, you know, you have to, I think when you're younger and you're hungry and you want to bust ass and you want to, you know, I wouldn't want to do a 10-hour walking day every day.
Yeah.
Once a week would be fantastic, but I wouldn't want to do that every day because that's just, that would be exhausting.
Yeah.
But, you know, finding the, you know, one of the biggest things that I think we actually talked about at Milwaukee is like one of my biggest things that I found out is like, I really need to create for me for personal happiness. And I need to schedule time for that. Otherwise I'll just be grumpy and I won't be at my best for people who are getting tattooed, you know?
Yeah. And if people want those designs you do for your personal happiness, if they want them tattooed on you or on them, then now you're making money, you're working off of things that make you happy.
Right.
That's dream job stuff.
Right. Well, that's like what we talked about earlier, like steering, you know, that's what I want to do. I want to, you know, I'd like to steer more of what, like when I'm doing bigger pieces, I want it to be stuff that I've drawn.
Yeah.
I don't want, this sounds so fucking arrogant, I guess, but I got so burnt out on like, I want a tiger, but you only have 13 stripes because I got 13 family members and each stripe has to mean something. It's just like, fuck. Like I've done a tree of life, but it has to have 38 leaves. And can you hide the initials of every family member in the fucking leaves? It's just
we put names in the tiger stripes?
Like, draw a monkey. And it just, that shit, I started to resent it because I'm like, not everything has to have a fucking meaning. Just do a cool tiger.
Yeah.
Like, just do something cool. Do something artistic.
Assign the meaning in your head. Be like, this tiger is for my family. It doesn't need to say, this tiger is for my family around it. Like, you can know that. You don't need to label everything.
No, I mean...
Sorry.
I'm not trying to like talk shit about clients, but like the overall, like ever since like Ink Masters happened, I feel like the general public thinks that everything has to have a meaning. And I think that's not really cool. Like, yeah, some stuff has to have a meaning, but sometimes stuff can just be fun.
Yeah. Or biomech is always labeled that it doesn't have a meaning.
Right.
And I'm like, what are you talking about? Of course it does. It has a giant meaning. And they're like, well, what is it? I'm like, this sleeve, this biomech sleeve's whole purpose is to sit here for the rest of your life and look fucking awesome.
That's the meaning. It looks awesome.
That's what it's supposed to do. That's its meaning. It's supposed to make other people go, wow, that right. looks awesome.
I always tell people, I'm like, you know, tattoos, even if you get a tattoo and it doesn't have a meaning, it kind of like, it gains a meaning because, or it becomes kind of like a milestone marker. Like you look down at it and you're like, oh, when I got this tattoo, I was this age and I was dating this person and I had this cat, you know, it's kind of gains a meaning if it doesn't have one, it doesn't need to.
You can find sentiment in anything.
Right. Yeah, meaningful tattoos is just one little genre of tattoos. Like there's other things of tattoos to get. Like they don't have to be sappy and sad and memorable. Like you can have fun with them unless you're only going to get one and you don't want to get just a design just for one. And who already knows they're only going to get one? Like how many people say they're going to just get one? Well, this is going to be my only one, and then you see him again.
Never
like a week later.
I feel like I have to clarify again, I'm not talking shit about people that get tattoos that mean something, because I get it, they want something that has a meaning for them. Mm-hmm. But that's not the only thing.
Yeah,
it's not the only reason people get tattooed. Sometimes, like for like biomech, it just accentuates the flow of the body, the fluidity of the human form, and it just makes it look awesome, you know.
Or say you have this very prominent meaning in your head, and it's verbal, but the artist puts it to a design, but it captures that meaning perfectly, but the design just isn't that cool.
Right. Yeah.
You still want it to look cool. Yeah. It could mean something 100% and make you cry every time you look at it, but it's ugly.
Right.
Yeah. It's funny.
Well, why do you want that?
Actually, it's funny because the tattoo that I have, was it the first time we met? It was the backstage at the rave with my pumpkin and peanut on my neck. That was the first time we met, wasn't it?
I think it was, because I saw that in the magazine and I saw it on you in person. I'm like, oh, I know that tattoo.
Yeah. That's the only tattoo I have on me that has meaning.
Yeah.
That's the only one. Everything else is like, I want to just do some skulls or a cool dragon or whatever.
I don't think I have much meaningful stuff on me either.
Funny, when I was for context, last summer I was in a pretty gnarly motorcycle accident. And when I was in the hospital, I was constantly talking to like the nurses and CNAs about like tattoos and stuff. And a lot of them would be like, oh yeah, I have to get a tattoo with meaning. And I'd be like, hey, look at my left leg. And they'd pull up my, you know, little fucking wound vac cover thing. And they'd see the gigantic chrome penis on the side of my leg. I remember one of my surgeons saying something. They're like, you have a pretty crazy tattoos on your legs. I saw the gigantic penis on the side of your leg.
You have a chrome penis on your leg?
I have a giant chrome penis on the side of my leg. Yeah.
Love that.
Nice.
Yeah, it's tight. It's tight. Do you know who Rachel Nelson is, Mutated Sushi?
Yes, yes.
She did it.
Okay.
It's killer. It's one of the best tattoos on my whole body.
Nice. Chrome penis. All right.
Yep.
But I love the chrome comeback. The chrome
yes.
back.
Yes. Yeah. So good.
Tribal too. Hell yeah.
There's this design that I've been trying to find somebody to get done. But from me and one of my buddies, it's a still shot, a screen grab of a porn actress named, what's her name? Something Chechik, and it's like a cum shot with a bunch of cum on her face, and it's split in half, and one half is like black and gray realism, and the other half is like it's like American traditionally drawn, and she has like a nun costume on.
Okay.
You know, the nun suit with the fucking, like the classic, you know, like the classic like nurse get up, but she's a nun instead.
Yeah.
And it's all the cum on that side is chrome. And it's I've been trying so hard to get someone to get it, bro. I want to do it so fucking bad.
Well, post it.
I'll do it again tomorrow.
Bad versions of it first.
I'll do it again tomorrow. I'll post it more. But
Paul Booth had some cool nun and penis flash back in the day. They're like some wart covered penises, just like one nailed to the wall. That was hanging in Forbidden Art.
That was Edward. That was Edward Lee.
Was it Ed Lee?
Yeah, it was an Ed Lee.
Was it?
Ed Lee. Edward Lee.
Yeah, I remember him.
I was going to say, isn't Paul Booth a black and gray guy?
Yeah. It wasn't chrome. It was black and gray.
Oh,
it was just,
okay.
Yeah, the similarity was that it was genitals.
Oh, sure. Okay. All right, I get it.
Genitals and nuns. That was
genitals and nuns. What a classic combo. Oh, sorry. I mean, genitals and priests.
I gotta say, you know,
the priests be jealous. Like, why are the nuns getting all the action?
Yeah, we have a habit of going off on tangents, and I'm enjoying this conversation. I'm just saying, you know, I don't know how much it's about like tattoo history and integrity, or just whatever.
Dicks are cool. Dicks and chrome, brother. Dicks, chromes, and nuns.
Chrome jizz.
That storm is actually just it's hitting us just now. I can see the lightning outside. It's awesome.
Really? Yeah. Oh, it's quiet here now. Is you getting hail?
Not yet.
Oh, it was lightning, bad. Though. It was really bad. It was so loud I couldn't even hear you guys. Had the volume all the way up. Had to walk away from a window and still couldn't hear.
Oh yeah, you guys are getting hit way worse than we are. A whole long red line going right through Milwaukee.
And it's all good now. It's quiet here.
Well, Lisa, Rich, did either of you guys have any other particular questions you wanted to get in here?
I need a moment to think about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was actually looking for the list of the questions that we had written down, because I don't think I sent it to Dan before the podcast, but I think we covered it all.
Yeah.
What we normally talk about, like inspiration, artists, like what would they do outside of tattooing?
Quite a few questions about apprenticeships that we.
Is there anything you want to plug, Dan, or talk about? Tell people what you're up to.
Well, the only thing we got coming up is the next Richmond convention. Me and Jason will be painting outside live for charity again, and everything will be auctioned off. And I believe this year the canvases will be a little smaller for the people that were bidding. The prices got a little high the last couple of years, so I think they should be a little lower this year if more people want to keep an eye on that. There's some pretty, I think they're 3 foot by 3 foot this year. They were 4 foot by 4 foot before. Yeah, so they're pretty big.
A website they can check that out at, or...
I believe it's the Giving Arts Foundation. And
that's the charity.
Yeah. And then we'll post stuff as time gets a little closer. I think he just announced the dates recently. I don't have them on me right now, but so it's but yeah, that's the only thing we got coming up. I don't get out traveling so much. So that's about it for me. I'm content with that.
Excellent.
Is that a .com, Giving Arts Charity?
.com? I think it's the Giving Arts Foundation.
It's, you know, you could plug that, let people know.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we'll post links as time gets closer.
Okay.
And while we're at the show.
Right.
Are you on Instagram?
Yes. Dan? Yep, at Dan Hazelton on Instagram.
Okay. I'll make sure to give you an ad. If I didn't already, I might already have you.
Okay. Excellent. I'll give us our little outro here. Well, Dan, thank you very much for making the time to sit down with us. We definitely all really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you to anyone who has listened thus far. We'll catch you next time on Pull the Line.